This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international programme of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hi, everyone at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host, Kay Shaw, and with me, as always, are...
Zachary Fruling and...
Suzanne Williamson.
Well, next week, there's an interesting day coming up in the calendar. Does anybody got any idea what that is?
Ooh, it's the haunting of To The Journey.
Yes. Next week is Halloween. So we thought maybe we'd do a little Halloween episode. So tonight we're going to talk about our favourite spooky moments and episodes and concepts in Voyager.
Spooky.
I don't think people think of Voyager as a spooky show. People think of Voyager as like the lighthearted Trek.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're totally wrong. True. There's a lot of spooky stuff in Voyager.
There is some creepy stuff going on, yes.
Yes. So tonight we're going to talk about the creepy bits.
So I think when you're talking about spooky stuff in Voyager, people immediately think of the haunting of Deck 12. Like that's the low-hanging spooky fruit.
Extremely yeah. low-hanging.
But there's more to spooky Voyager than that. Extremely low-hanging, yes.
There is, actually. And I think it's quite interesting that even though The Haunting of Deck 12 is obviously set up to be a Halloween episode and obviously set up to be this ghost story idea, and on paper it should be really spooky, I'm actually not entirely sure it delivers on that, but...
No.
But it wasn't actually a Halloween episode. It came too late in the season to actually be a Halloween
episode. Right,
okay.
I wasn't quite sure of the exact timing of the episode.
Yeah, it aired May 17th.
Oh, right. Well, there you go.
It's like the anti-Halloween episode.
Yeah, it's quite weird that, isn't it? Because you'd assume it would be a bit of a theme episode in that way.
You know what happens when a Halloween episode and an anti-Halloween episode collide?
No.
They annihilate each other?
Yeah, something like that.
Wouldn't they just cancel each other out?
So it's funny because I do kind of think of The Haunting of Deck 12 as a Halloween episode, but it's totally not.
Yeah, same here. It is one of the first ones I thought of when we were trying to think of spooky episodes, just because it's there in the title, really.
Don't you think that Neelix would be all about trick-or-treat, though, as the morale officer?
Yes.
I think he'd be too scared.
I forgot that in this episode he wants to replicate curtains, just like in Night. He has got a thing for it. He's claustrophobic and he doesn't like the dark, apparently.
He's probably afraid of spiders and snakes and things like that, too.
He's kind of a nervous Nelly. I didn't really realize that.
He is in places, yeah.
This episode reinforced it, having not seen it in a while. Yeah.
Neelix has got some like interesting stuff going on, though, with his backstory, hasn't he? So I think he's got some kind of nervous disorder.
Yeah, he's
like
got some issues.
PTSD.
Yeah.
His family being annihilated, that's kind of an issue, yeah.
I think we hear, don't we, that he went back there. Do we hear that he went back there and kind of saw the devastation afterwards? I think we hear that, don't we? Yeah, I think we do. Or is that in Pathways? Maybe that's in Pathways.
It's one of those.
I'm sure it gets mentioned at some point anyway.
I know in this episode he's afraid of the nebula, but I always think of Neelix in Night being afraid of the nothingness, nihilophobia. Yeah.
Wow, breaking out that big word. That's a $10 word right there.
I know my Latin. I went to Starfleet Academy. Wesley Crusher was in my Latin class.
What do you guys think overall of the idea of this episode? Like the idea of this ghost story that Neelix is telling to the Borg kids?
It was a good idea, but it just wasn't played out very well.
Yeah, I kind of agree, I think. I don't think it really delivers on the premise. I think it could have been a lot spookier than it is, I think.
Oh, that's the thing. It's like it goes halfway to spooky. Right, it should have gone way spookier if they're going to do a spooky episode.
Yeah. I mean, there are some kind of spooky bits in the episode, particularly spooky bits. I think the bit when Seven comes out of the cargo bay and she can't get out because she's trapped by these force fields and then kind of the energy thing sort of gets her. That was a bit, what's going on kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the rest of the episode is kind of forgettable, really.
Yes, it is.
So, you know what my favorite part of this episode is? It's when one of the Borg kids, Mizadi, says that snacks are irrelevant.
Yeah.
I can totally picture her at trick-or-treat. She's like, trick-or-treat, candy is irrelevant.
Candy is never irrelevant.
I don't know whether she thinks that it's irrelevant all of the time. I think, wasn't it in that context because she was so engaged in the story? She was like, no, I don't want to break off and... He was trying to persuade them to kind of have a break from the story and have some snacks, and she was just like, no, I want to hear what happens next.
Do you think Neelix did that because he knew that they were into the story and he was kind of pulling their leg a little bit, like, okay, let's stop and have a snack? Or was he serious, like, it's time to eat now?
Or was he getting scared himself and he needed a break?
Maybe. I hadn't thought of that.
Is Neelix scaring himself with his own ghost story?
He might be. I wouldn't put it past him.
I did find it kind of interesting, though, because you get to the end of the episode and you're not entirely sure what out of what he tells them is true and what's not true.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bit that I found kind of weird. That I think that's probably the most creepy thing about it, and that is the bit that I think is... You can lose that quite easily in the way that the episode's presented, but that as a concept is quite scary.
I love that the fact that you can't tell, because some weird stuff happens on Voyager. It really does. If you really go down the list here that we're going to talk about of some spooky, weird stuff, this is a totally plausible thing that could have happened on Voyager, given all the other weird stuff that happens. On the other hand, it's a little heightened and exaggerated and, you know, it could be a story too. We don't really know. I love that it leaves it open-ended.
It could be that none of it happened and Neelix just made it all up.
It's all in his mind.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's probably... the most interesting thing about this episode and the most creepy, because really it's the things that you don't know that are scarier than the things that are kind of written out there for you. It's the gaps that are the scariest bits. That's what I find anyway. The gaps are always the scary bits.
Yeah, but just like in Jaws, not seeing the shark was the scary part. And then once you see it, it's like, oh, yeah. But not seeing it just plays with your head.
Mm, definitely.
Now, Zach, you have seen Jaws, right?
Not in a long time. You know the one I remember? I remember going to see Jaws 4 in the movie theater when I was a kid.
Which one is Jaws 4?
It's like Jaws 4, The Revenge.
No, oh, The Revenge. Right? Oh, yeah. With Michael, what's his noodle? Michael Caine.
Right. I remember seeing that in the theater. I don't remember the first thing about it. And I have seen the original Jaws, but not in a long, long time. So it's not my thing. Yeah. I told you I'm a rom-com guy.
Okay. Well, as long as you've seen it. Because we always say things that you're like, oh, I haven't seen that.
I know, it's like the running to the journey joke. Let's all talk about another movie Zach hasn't seen. No, I actually was a little disappointed in The Haunting of Deck 12. I wanted to like it. I do like spooky track, like Cat's Paw from the original series. I think that was such a fun, weird, you know, half spooky, half weird kind of original series episode. You know, all the spooky track I love, but this one kind of falls flat. It's not really that spooky. It's not really that scary. It's not really that interesting either, and it just kind of falls flat for me.
It's a forgettable episode.
Yeah, I'd agree.
For me.
I do want to see what Neelix's curtains would have looked like, though.
Yes.
He said he had the perfect fabric.
Probably psychedelic.
No, Neelix. Because, I mean, look at his outfits. They're weird enough. I can only imagine what his curtains would look like.
Maybe they're, like, plain and brown and boring. Like maybe
doubt it.
The other direction.
Highly, highly doubt it.
Like, it's not like that. It's Neelix's version of an ironic accessory. Like, plain curtains.
Okay, so going back to what we think that Neelix might be afraid of, I said spiders and snakes. What about clowns? I just think he'd be afraid of clowns. It would have been interesting to see him go up against Fear the Clown in the thaw, if he had a fear of clowns.
Yeah, I can see Neelix being scared of clowns, definitely. I don't know what they have in his culture that's like a clown, whether they have a concept like that or not.
Or if he's the clown.
Freaked out by them. Maybe he is.
So does an episode like The Thaw properly count as a Halloween episode? Is that spooky Trek? I think that's spooky Voyager. It's really creepy and weird to me.
It's spookier than The Haunting of Deck 12 to me.
Definitely.
More disturbing, I think.
Definitely.
Yes. But, you know, disturbing and creepy is still Halloween-y.
Yeah, they're kind of, you know, they're almost synonyms, according to the thesaurus that you checked earlier.
Thesaurus.com.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really quite disturbing stuff in that episode. On the face of it, it seems weird, but also kind of comedic, because we've got this circus idea, and the characters kind of do look a bit goofy, and if you just see pictures of it, it looks kind of goofy.
That's totally okay. And so,
yeah, no, that's fine.
Think back to Cat's Paw, how ridiculous it was to have this little silhouette shadow of a cat on the wall. It's clearly like a run-of-the-mill ordinary house cat. And it's like larger than life on the wall. And it's hilarious.
It's still ridiculous.
It's okay for Spooky Trek to be hilarious. That's okay.
Yeah. But then I think if you just saw pictures of it, if you watched it later on, you'd be quite creeped out by some of the stuff that happens in that episode. Yeah. I mean, they're going to get the people and put them in the guillotine and chop their heads off. I mean, they do it. They've already done it to a couple of people, I think, before they show up, haven't they? And then there's like this other, the other guy does get killed during the actual episode, but they're going to do it to Harry at one point. They're like,
right, with the guillotine? I can't remember.
Sticking him in the guillotine, yeah.
I wish and, they like, had.
Chop his head off.
Add that to the list of Harry's deaths.
Can we stop with the Harry hate?
Okay, so just a little bit of a tangent. Like, what's the scariest movie you guys have ever seen? Like, we'll do a little compare and contrast. Okay, oh, so that's
scariest
pretty scary.
Movie.
Yeah.
Like, scary now or scary when I was a kid?
Over your entire life.
Because I watched the movie I thought was scary then. It isn't scary now.
Your call completely.
The movie that you personally found the scariest, even if you don't think other people necessarily would.
Exactly.
Blair Witch Project.
Never saw it.
That was good. Of course you've never seen it.
For me, like, because the way my psychology works is if you don't see it, it's scarier. That movie kept me awake for about 3 weeks when I was a teenager. And I probably saw it when I was younger than I should have done.
I remember seeing it in the theaters. I was like, yeah, scary. Although I love scary movies, so I was brought up on them. Yeah, something I thought that was really scary when I was younger, even though I loved watching it over and over and over again, was Phantasm. The tall man and the flying silver spheres that stick to your head and spit your brains out the other side. You used to scare me so much as a kid, and I've watched it recently, and I was like, oh, I'm just a little sad. And I think it's just because I've seen so many horror films and scary movies that none of them get to me anymore. I mean, I can fall asleep to a horror movie.
When I was an early teenager, I watched this weird movie called Image of the Beast, and it has the most epically suspenseful guillotine scene, because they don't really show anything, but it's totally suspense. Like, there's, like, first-person perspective looking up at the thing, and it's, like, ready to fall and ready to fall, and it just drags it out so long, and it's so terrifying.
Yeah, I find suspense really, really difficult to deal with in movies.
So the Thaw's like, you know, scary.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether I find the Thaw scary as an adult. I think if I'd seen it as a kid, I probably would have found it quite scary.
I do have a fear of clowns, so it's a little creepy to me.
Okay, then.
And Michael McKean does an amazing job as fear.
Is there an official name for clownophobia, just like nihilophobia? You know,
I'm sure there is.
It does have a name. I can't remember what it is, but it does have a name, yes. Frugalit.
I'm totally going to look this up.
Frugaling!
Hold on, I'm doing it right now.
And actually, my fear of clowns and my fear of spiders always collided with Stephen King's It, which was not cool.
Yeah. No.
Fear of clowns is coulrophobia, C-O-U-L-R-O phobia.
So my phobia is cool.
You know, somewhere out there, there's like a whole class on this. Do you think at Clown College, there's like a class on this?
How to handle people being afraid of
totally.
You screaming and running away. Yeah. I find it interesting that they chose to make Fear a clown in the episode. I wonder whether there's anybody on the writing staff of Voyager that had a clown phobia.
Or anyone in the cast, and they just wanted to mess with them.
Yeah. Maybe it was Garrett.
I'll have to ask him next year at Dragon Con. Do you have a fear of clowns?
So one thing that stands out to me about Spooky Voyager is that it's not like one particular episode, because you've got the Haunting of Deck 12 and you've got the Thaw, and they're a little spooky and weird. But there's a lot of just spooky, weird imagery in Voyager. Like the thing that came to my mind immediately when I was thinking about this was the dismembered Borg in Scorpion, the pile of dismembered Borg. Yeah. That is so creepy.
It's pretty creepy. It's one that sticks with you, definitely, when that shows up there.
Yeah, it's not an entire episode of creepiness, but that's pretty extreme.
Mm-hmm. Just as an image itself, it's... Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a frame that sticks in your head, isn't it? Definitely, I agree with that.
And with Voyager, they make the Borg kind of creepy in general with Seven of Nine. I mean, like, look at the way Seven of Nine looks when they first kind of de-Borgify this half-Borgified woman. That is a weird image that's kind of spooky itself.
All I can think of is boobs.
You know, me too.
That's
really,
all that pops into my head. I'm like, Seven of Nine, boobs.
Me three.
Hey, we agree on something for once.
We agree on something for once. And apparently it's Jeri Ryan's breasts.
I don't find boobs spooky.
Spooky boobs. No.
Who knew it took that to bring us all together, you know?
I think we just officially failed as feminists. But anyway, let's carry on.
Feminists can like boobs.
Feminists can like boobs, and we respect Jeri Ryan as a wonderful person that she is.
But that was what I remember, Seven of Nine, like, de-Borgifying boobs.
Yeah.
Because they were front and center.
They generally are, I find.
They are. They played them up quite a lot. And she's such a great actress, they didn't need to do that.
No, they didn't. But I do think, I know that Voyager gets criticized a lot for kind of defanging the Borg. And kind of making them seem less scary because our Voyager crew kind of get these strategies for being able to handle them. And I accept that to an extent, but I don't think to me the Borg ever stop being scary and creepy.
No. Well,
I think what they did, they put too much of a face to it. Like when in The Next Generation, you had Locutus, of course, but then you had just sort of faceless, mindless, zombie-like Borg, this massive ship coming at you that you can't do anything about, and it was pretty intense. Once you started interacting more with the Borg, you get the Borg Queen, it starts to have more of a personal voice to it, I think it lost something of its zombie-like quality.
Well, then it started losing it back in First Contact.
Right. I think that was the beginning of the end. Mm. It's all First Contact's fault. It's nothing to do
so
with
it's
Voyager.
Alice Krieger's fault is what you're saying. No.
No, she was amazing, but she did defanged the Borg. It was totally her, wasn't Voyager.
And she's so not like the Borg Queen in real life, because I met her last year at Destination and she's just such a lovely person.
Well, she's got a full body, you know, attached, so.
The body helps.
Her body goes all the way up.
I can vouch for the fact that she is not just the head and shoulders, yeah.
That would make her super creepy if she was just
that would make it creepy. Well, that's a creepy concept in and of itself, isn't it? And I know that Voyager doesn't introduce that, but I'm still creeped out whenever I see that.
But we do see that in Voyager.
They reiterate it, yeah.
We do, but it's not the first time we see it, is it? But they do reiterate it, yes. And that is creepy.
It is
weird,
creepy.
And strange.
With the little spine that's kind of moving and wiggling.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, ew!
Like a worm.
That's gross. But I think, to me, the most creepy bit of Borg, anything that we get in Voyager for me, is when some of our crew get Borgified.
Yes, they're so weird looking. The thing is, too, they made the Borg makeup spookier over time. Like, you know, in The Next Generation, the Borg was just like a little bit of green face paint and, you know, a couple of appliances.
Yeah, because Hugh wasn't
on.
Spooky or creepy looking at all to me.
Yeah, and then they started to kind of greeble the skin tone and the little, you know, the texture got weird and it got kind of slimy looking. And the Borg got slimy looking at a certain point.
Yeah, it all started getting very mottly and very unnatural looking and stuff. Yeah. And it was harder to see that they'd ever been a person, but... I think our crew Borgified looked pretty...
That was creepy.
An image, I think, that sticks in the head, because I know we get to see Picard as Locutus, but he doesn't look that different from himself.
No, but he looked scary.
Yeah,
he did. He affected me more than seeing Janeway and Tuvok and B'Elanna as Borg.
I think as well, because it's the first time we saw it.
Could be. That and... Oh, Patrick Stewart.
And they'd established Captain Picard as such a mellow kind of... You know, even keel, intense, but kind of even keel character, to see him lose that quality, you know, because he's such a good actor that can pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was shocking at the time. And
yeah, I still think I find any of our established characters being shown as Borg to be a really disturbing idea just because it kind of shows you what could happen.
Who is the creepiest Borg Voyager crew member?
B'Elanna.
Oh, I thought it was Janeway.
I think Tuvok is really weird as a Borg, personally.
Oh, well, there you go. We all disagree. Yay, we're back to disagreeing again. I just think, like, Kate made up as a Borg, she looks so much different to herself.
I was more affected seeing her as a Klingon than seeing her as a Borg.
Yeah, she does look weird as Klingon as well.
That was creepier than her being a Borg.
Janeway as a Borg, you know, she you know what she should have said? She should have said, coffee is futile.
Coffee is never futile.
Total role reversal, yeah.
We've already established previously that she beat the Borg with coffee, so...
Yes, she did.
Presumably, she gets assimilated, she has her first cup, and just she takes down the entire collective.
So coffee is not futile, that's what you're saying.
The Borg caffeinated is just not going to end well. It's a scary thought.
Should we talk about, like, species 8472? Are they creepy, like Halloween creepy? Yeah. I think the Borg, the slimy Borg all kind of greebled up in Voyager, I think that's really creepy. I don't know if species 8472... They're like monsters, kind of, but they're not creepy.
What they do to Harry is creepy, with the little tendrils and everything.
Yes, that's an excellent example. I hadn't thought of that one.
I didn't think about it till you said species 8472. I was like, oh yeah, Harry almost died.
With some green slime, like he was on an episode of Nickelodeon or something, like Double Dare or something, right?
Yeah, super Double Dare.
Had a little Double Dare slime on you there, Harry.
I think the concept of introducing a species that can beat the Borg, that's quite a scary idea. I think when they first show up, I do get what you're saying, they're just kind of like a bit of a monster-looking thing, and obviously now we've got CGI so we can come up with something that's not humanoid.
See, I think Voyager kind of falls in the trap of constantly, like, one-upping their bad guys. Like, okay, who can beat the Vidians? I don't know. It's the Borg. Who can beat the Borg? Species 8472. Like, they just constantly have to keep going bigger and bigger and bigger.
And who can beat them all? Captain Janeway.
Yes. Captain Janeway is the top of the Delta Quadrant food chain, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I do think the idea of a species that can beat the Borg is scary when they first show up because, you know, the Borg are such a scary concept.
Well, monsters are a part of Halloween, right? The kind of scary monsters. They don't have to be creepy and slimy to be Halloween. The monsters are a part of Halloween. I think it's
scary with her.
And I know they kind of humanize, for lack of a better word, species 8472 eventually. Mm-hmm. But when they first introduce them, they're kind of monster-like.
Mm. Like giant praying mantises. That's what they reminded me of. I was like, ah, they're going to bite your
head.
Like
some sort of like Japanese monster movie, like, you know, some sort of insect creature or, you know, Rodan or something, right?
Mothra,
yeah.
Yeah, and when they first show up as well, all they seem to want to do is just annihilate everything. So
can you blame them?
Yeah, there's not a lot of compromising there, is there?
But that's kind of what it's like. You know, like in Japanese monster movies, you get like Mothra versus Godzilla or Rodan versus whomever. This is like the Borg versus species 8472. This is a Japanese monster movie.
That does make sense, actually.
Now, the way you said that, it was like celebrity deathmatch, though.
Right. That's what Japanese monster movies are. They're like, you know, celebrity monster deathmatch.
That is true. That is what they're like. I know there's a lot of people that criticize the idea that we had this species 8472 that came in and could beat the Borg because then the Borg got less scary. But I don't know. I don't know whether I hold with that.
There's always a bigger dog out there. Always.
Yeah. I mean, what do you guys think? Do you guys think the Borg got made too sort of commonplace and less scary in Voyager?
No, not at all.
Again, it's the Jaws principle. The more you trot out the shark, the less scary it is, right? So with the Borg, it's not that anything they showed about the Borg made them less scary. I think they just used them too much, right? They need to be something you trot out once a season, not several times.
So they jumped the shark, is what you're saying.
they jumped the shark, but yes. Good one, Suzanne.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much.
I feel like I walked smack into the bulkhead on that one.
Did.
Jump the Borg, that's what they did.
That you could take a whole different way.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, that's giving me mental images I didn't need.
Depending on which Borg you're thinking of.
True.
Because this is what they did in Japanese monster movies. It's like, oh, Godzilla. Well, who can beat Godzilla? Mothra. Well, who can beat Mothra? Pick your favorite.
Yeah.
Rodan. Who can beat Rodan?
Delta Quadrant Deathmatch. I wonder how else they would have dealt with it, because I think it was well established that the Borg came from the Delta Quadrant, and we were obviously going to run into them. And I, you know, when we're going through Borg space, we're going to run into the Borg. So I kind of think the only way they could have gotten around them showing up a lot of the time is as doing something different. I think it's just an inherent part of the whole concept of Voyager that we're going to run into the Borg.
And when Voyager was announced and it was going to be in the Delta Quadrant, I was excited because I was like, yes, Borg. I was excited that we were going to see them again. He scared me.
That's brilliant. Genuine fear.
What you listeners at home don't realize is that we're actually recording in the dark. We all turned our lights out to do spooky, spooky Voyager talk. We talked about doing Trek After Dark on Trek FM. That's come up in conversation a few times. This is actually Trek in the Dark.
Yes.
Ooh, spookier.
Ooh.
It is spooky. But what it has resulted in is Suzanne's husband just coming into the room and scaring her.
But he brought me a beer, so it's okay.
That's fine. As long as the creeps and the ghouls bring beer.
So if Species 8472 shows up with a six-pack, you're good to go?
Oh, heck yeah. Well, no, let me reiterate. As long as it's a craft beer. No Budweiser, no Bud Light, none of this domestic swill. Stella
nonsense.
No.
Yeah.
It's got to be the good stuff. Or else I get my compression phaser rifle out and I start, you know, blasting away.
So are there any other aspects of the Borg that are worth mentioning? Like any other Borg imagery that we've totally forgot? I think for me, it's the dismembered Borg and Scorpion that totally defines what I'm going for here. But
not really imagery as much as them all speaking as one. I mean, just that whole sound.
Well, it's zombie-like.
It's just kind of
the Borg are zombies. That's what I'm saying. The Borg are like Halloween zombie characters. Absolutely. Yeah. Just the whole idea of them. They're especially when they're first introduced, they just keep coming and coming and coming, right? And then, you know, they make them a little more complicated later. When they after they've adapted and they become a little more social, for lack of a better word.
Well, yeah. Exactly. And I mean, you know, the lighting as well, the whole green lighting thing. Yes. I mean, the Borg cube is basically like one big Halloween party, isn't it?
Okay, I have a question about this. Actually, this is a bit of a tangent, but it's an important one. When did green become a Halloween killer? Because when I was a kid, it was like orange and black. And now it's like orange and black and green and purple are Halloween killers. Walk around the store and see all the green and purple
stuff.
It's
that certain
green. Slime and stuff, isn't it?
It's not like Christmas green. It's that kind of olive.
It's like slime or witch's brew or something,
green,
right? Yeah.
Like
yeah. Back to Double Dare.
Pea green or, yeah.
Double Dare green, yes.
So Nickelodeon slime is Halloween.
Yeah. But it's interesting, actually, because the green lighting for the Borg, I mean, that just becomes so much of a thing, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And I think it adds so much to, like, the imagery of the Borg and the overall look of them. Like, that is such a big thing about how they look. Could you imagine, like, if they'd used blue lighting or red lighting, it would have looked totally different.
Why do the Borg need green mood lighting?
I don't know.
It's the most impractical thing to have on a Borg ship. What is the green light all about?
Maybe there's Barry White playing in the background. Let's get it on.
Ooh, baby, resistance is futile.
Oh, please do that again. Barry White as a Borg. This is
Barry
the best
White
ever.
Was assimilated. Oh, no. Ooh, baby, you have been assimilated.
Wow.
So the Borg aside, I was trying to think of other spooky imagery. And one thing that popped in my mind, I don't know if you guys feel the same way about this, but remember in the episode Life Signs when they show the Vidian innards? Vidians are already kind of greebly and biologically spooky and gross. But then when they show their innards, like they have a full-blown skeleton in Halloween style for the Vidians.
Oh, like Dr. Pell? Okay.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And then they show the organs, and then they show, you know, it's like, wow, that's like, ew, it's very biological.
Yeah, why did he have to build all of that just to make her holographic appearance?
I mean, it was kind of cool to see what they could do with basically computer-generated art at that point, you know, which is what they were doing, you know, playing with the new technology. Like, oh, we can show someone's innards now, that's cool. But they show a skeleton. It's spooky.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. I hadn't really thought about that moment, actually, but it is kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just weird imagery.
It's very weird imagery.
And just instead of just, like, boom, you're a hologram. Why did he have to show the innards and all that? That's kind of creepy.
Let's build your spleen.
It is odd, though, isn't it? Because, like, when you've got a hologram there, you know, they've not got all these late...
Maybe they do.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Like,
so the doctor's like an onion? He's got layers.
Yeah, he's multi-layered.
He's like Shrek.
The doctor has many layers, but I think that's a different podcast.
I mean, are they fully, like, physiologically complete holograms? Does he have, like, does he have holographic blood flowing through his veins, that kind of thing?
I don't know. That's a really interesting question.
Holographic skin under his holographic uniform?
I don't know. I always thought that it was just, like, the outside of him that we see, because, I don't know, it's one of those weird ones, isn't it? Because if it's light, and he's made up of light, like, what makes the light? Like, it's the emitter, isn't it? And how does the emitter make, like, him all the inside part at the same time as making the outside part? I don't know. I don't really understand how the science works. That's making my
brain
hurt.
It's all photons and force fields.
Can't he have some skeletal photons and some organ photons and some fluid photons and...
Don't forget the force fields.
It's not all photons. It's photons and force fields, yes.
Yeah.
Getting back to the Vidians, though. The Vidians, I mean, this is so creepy. These, you know, weird-looking gross aliens that want to steal your organs. If that sounds Halloween to me.
And your face. They'll steal your face.
Yeah, full-on Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, you can't get much more Halloween-y than that.
Except they
you?
Don't have fava beans and a nice Chianti.
They've got Leal root and a nice... I can picture this kind of weird Silence of the Lambs moment. We ate his liver with some Leola root and an Antarian cider.
Creepy. It is. It's so creepy. Like, the Vidians as a race are just so creepy. They really are.
They're
like your ultimate Star Trek Halloween race, I think. And I think for me as well, the Vidians, like, yeah, they just have this one shtick, but that makes sense to me because they're so... focused on trying to keep themselves alive and kind of this phage has just basically taken over everything that they do. It makes sense to me that that is just all that we ever really find out about them because that is just become their focus so much.
But the Borg are like that too. Like, how much mileage do they get out of Resistance is Futile? I mean, you know, there's only one. There's a Borg shtick, there's a Vidian shtick. Yeah.
Well, you know, the media's gotten a lot of mileage out of zombies over the years, so.
Exactly.
It's not really much. It's not really much different, is it? I think it's just a terrifying concept, isn't it? Like losing yourself but still be walking around.
Well, yeah, there's that urban legend of people harvesting kidneys and, you know, you wake up in a ice bathtub and one of your kidneys is gone.
Is that a
wowzers
thing?
That is an urban legend, yes.
I'm never going to go to sleep again.
Well, you know, you can make some dough selling your organs on the black market. Yeah.
No, well, you know.
Apparently so.
I'll consider it.
Well, do it before somebody steals them out from under you.
Right.
Well, you know, kind of segueing slightly from talking about organ harvesting to scientific experimentation. Yeah. And another one that came to mind when I was thinking about kind of Halloween-y, spooky, weird episodes is scientific method.
Yeah.
So this idea of this kind of race who are, they're in a slightly different sort of plane where we can't see them and they're secretly doing experiments on us, that's pretty Halloween-y, right?
Yeah, I totally, you know the image of Captain Janeway with the little spikes coming
all
out of her head?
Stuff
that
out
totally
head.
Reminds me of Frankenstein with the little bolts coming out of his neck.
Yeah.
Well, don't we see like skeletons making out?
Yes, we do.
So it's like Halloween meets Valentine's Day?
What? Hey, Valentine's Day was a scary movie.
Yeah, because we see, don't we, B'Elanna and Tom kind of getting it all. And
well, we do, but we don't.
X-ray thing.
Yeah.
Yes, we do, but we don't. Yeah, and then we see Chakotay, an internal shot of Chakotay drinking coffee as well, don't we, I think? Because he gets the coffee and he drinks it and then there's like this picture of it going down.
That's not the best visual of Chakotay.
You know what that shot actually reminds me of? There's this really old, I think it's from like the late 20s, this Disney short cartoon called The Skeleton Dance with the little black and white dancing skeletons. That's what that scene totally reminds me of. I can picture Chakotay like drinking his coffee, doing a little dance.
Doing a little dance. He's doing a jig.
That's pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, just this idea that there are people there that we can't see who are like...
doing harm. Yeah.
They got their probes and their little... We see a bunch of the crew, don't we? With this, like, weird, like, metal things on their heads and stuff.
Yeah. And then Chakotay getting old and Neelix getting old.
Yeah, Neelix getting all Mylian and stuff.
Chakotay losing his beautiful hair.
But we do get to find out that his tattoo goes, like...
Goes all the way around, yes.
All the way back. It's not just the bit you can see. It's, like, underneath his hair as well.
You know, that had to hurt getting that tattoo.
Well, obviously he had to shave his head to do it, or at least shave a chunk of his head.
Yeah. I would just shave the whole thing, because having just the one weird strip, it'd be like a freaky kind of mohawk. Yeah.
I can picture this conversation behind the scenes like, okay, Robert, we're going to have to shave your head and tattoo you.
Okay,
take one for the team, buddy. Come on.
Take one for the team.
Here's an extra $5 this week.
Don't you think, and this is an interesting little kind of cultural point, actually, because I know that, like, when you guys do Halloween in the States, whenever I've seen Halloween for years and years on the TV from the States, like, when you've had Halloween parties and costume dress-up and stuff, you've always kind of just dressed as anything. Now, in the UK, that's, like, more so now people do that, but, like, when I was a kid... And up until, like, not that many years ago, at Halloween, you wouldn't just dress up as, like, a random person or, like, an army guy or something like that. You know, all the costumes were very much themed as scary stuff. So it would be, like, ghosts, witches, skeletons,
yeah,
all that type of
thing.
Like, it would be very much specifically themed as, like, the Halloween-y thing. And I always think, oh, wouldn't, like, one of those images of one of those people from Scientific Method be a really cool Halloween costume where you're, like, in your Starfleet uniform and then you just got this, like, weird metal thing on your head?
That would be an amazing cosplay to do.
That would be
con.
A cool cosplay.
Yeah, it's kind of like Hellraiser, you know, with the spikes coming out. And the, yeah.
Oh, Pinhead.
Captain Pinhead.
Captain Pinhead and Lieutenant Chatterbox. I could see
this
that.
This is totally going to be known as the Captain Pinhead episode from now on.
But yeah, I mean, those images are weird, aren't they? Like, there's this one guy that's got his head in this thing and it's just got these bolts and you're just like, oh gosh, he looks like he's got a vice on his head and you can just imagine them, like, tightening it. And,
I've got a headache. Someone's tightening the screws.
That's because somebody is tightening an invisible vice on your head.
And the look on Seven's face as she's seeing her crewmates like this is just, that's disturbing too, because she's trying not to react, but she's reacting.
Yeah, because she's trying not to let them know that she can see them and know that they're there and stuff. Yeah. Like when she's in the turbo lift and, like, the woman sticks the thing in her face and she just has not react. It's a super Halloween-y episode. It's a horrifying concept, isn't it?
It's awful.
Can't see, like, doing stuff to you. Ugh.
Yeah, it's in line with, like, those classic alien abduction kind of scary stories, right?
Yeah.
It's X-Files. This is Voyager's X-Files episode.
Yeah. Well, one of.
but this is a good one.
Because, I mean, you know, it's surprising how many times we see our crew getting weirdly manipulated or experimented on.
Harry. It's usually Harry.
Yeah, Harry. Yes. Well, it's funny you talk about Harry, actually, because, you know, moving on slightly from zombies, which we've talked about, to scientific experimentation onto mummies...
Emanations.
Yes.
Lady Gaga.
Yes. Because you got the spider webs at the beginning.
Yes.
Right? It's very, it's like you're in a dungeon with spiders, and then you've got the weird Lady Gaga thing with the pod and the,
with the egg.
Mummified Harry Kim.
Can't you picture this morphing into, like, Michael Jackson's Thriller video, too?
Yes. Definitely. I'm with you on that.
Oh, that's awesome. I can see them all doing the dance.
Yes, totally.
I used to know that dance.
But yeah, I mean, like, you know, mummified Harry Kim. And he's even in a sarcophagus and everything. Poor Harry. Shouldn't happen to an ensign.
Yeah, Harry is bringing the plagues of Egypt with him back to Voyager. So.
But I mean, you know, this episode's got some weird ideas in it. Not just the fact that, you know, they mummify people, which is... I mean, yeah, I guess cultures do.
Mummify them alive.
Yeah, mummify alive.
There you go. There's the scary bit.
Right.
Yeah, buried alive. Buried alive.
It's literally like in the movie The Mummy. Like, they mummified him alive.
Yeah.
Except Harry is no Boris Karloff.
No.
Okay, so the spider webs looking things in the beginning of Emanations made me think of the spider in Coda. trying to lure Janeway into its matrix.
Into his webby matrix, yeah. That episode's kind of Halloween-y, isn't it?
It is, because spiders are scary, to me anyway. I usually scream and throw things at them until they die.
See, I kind of want to go back to the Barry White thing. I picture this Barry White spider. Come back to my place. The night is young, and the web is satin.
Barry White spider is awesome. I would not throw things and scream at him.
I don't think Janeway's dad looks like Barry White. No, I don't think they could have actually gone with that. But here, you know, we've got another really creepy concept here. You know, this kind of thing that preys on people at the moment of death, you know, waiting for people to die so that it can kind of scoop them up and take their energy.
This is death at the door, absolutely.
Yeah, it doesn't let them die, but, like, sucks them dry.
And I mean, I guess the thing that we don't really find out so much in Coda is, you know, what happens when somebody does go into that matrix? You know, are they aware? Do they have an awareness, or is it literally just their energy's taken? Like, how do they experience that? That's a scary one. Again, you don't know what happens, so it's all these things that your brain's filling in all the time.
Yeah, it makes me want to know what happens. Ooh. Somebody write that fanfic. I need to know.
Janeway in the matrix. Oh no, that's a different fanfic.
This is essentially like death knocking at the door with a sickle, right? I mean, it's like, it's that weird.
With his bony little finger.
Yeah.
It's scary. It totally is. That's the thing. I think Voyager is so lighthearted, we forget that these are really scary things. And even when Voyager's a little scary, you kind of laugh at it like, oh, it's only half scary. But these are really scary images and ideas.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that's not the only really kind of scary, weird, creepy thing that we get in Coda. Because I know we talked about this extensively when we did our Coda episode. And I don't want to, again, talk too much about Coda because we're going to start sounding like a broken record if we're not careful. But... We did talk quite a lot about the doctor sort of, and his idea of euthanizing the captain.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, that is...
That was quite a scary, weird, creepy moment in Coda as well.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of, like, you know how, like, sexy Halloween costumes are a thing now? You know, like, the sexy nurse costume? I can picture the doctor being, like, the creepy, sexy nurse. Like, I don't want to euthanize you.
My God, Zach.
He's showing a lot of leg.
Is that how he gets off his speeding tickets?
It never works for me.
It works for Zach, apparently.
Well, he's much taller than me, so he has more leg to show. I'm very short, that's so true. There's not a lot of leg there.
Yeah, I'd probably blind everyone. But no, like, I'm serious. Like, the scary nurse kind of, like, you know, evil doctors and evil nurses, you know, mad scientist kind of. You know, that whole genre of costumes and scary stuff. Mm-hmm. I could totally picture the doctor being like the scary evil doctor.
So like a mad scientist.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the only other real kind of proper creepy concept idea of an episode that I thought of was Waking Moments, which is the episode where the crew fall asleep and there's these aliens that they're asleep on this planet and they're... reality is actually like our dream world. Mm-hmm. And by being there we're kind of affecting them and stuff, and they want to get us out of it and stuff. That there's some creepy stuff going on in that episode. I mean, there's some funny stuff in that episode as well, and some of the nightmare stuff is quite funny, like the whole Harry and Seven thing and Tuvok ending up on the bridge naked and
naked
all that kind
Tuvok.
Of stuff.
Eek.
That's quite funny. And I mean, I don't think that in the actual nightmares that we see anything particularly horrifying apart from Janeway's one.
I was gonna say, for Tuvok it wasn't funny.
Yeah, I can picture it. Tuvok, we know it's Halloween, buddy, but you gotta remember your costume.
Yeah, that was his costume. Naked Vulcan. That's what he came as, a naked Vulcan.
Put your shields up, Tuvok. Put your shields up.
But I mean, in Janeway's dream, we see a very creepy scene where she goes into the mess hall and we've got all the dead crew sitting there.
Yes, desiccated. That's weird.
Ugh. Yeah. Except for Neelix. Why wasn't he, you know, dead?
Because he was there to go, ha ha ha. He was Richard O'Brien.
That's awesome. So is it time for the time warp?
Yes, definitely.
Sweet.
Time for the time warp.
Sweet.
At that point, all of the dead crew stand up and start doing the time warp, and Janeway and Neelix join in.
I love it.
But That visually is quite scary. But there's one bit that gets mentioned which, whilst it's funny, is still horrifying. Because Neelix doesn't... We don't see Neelix's dream, but he does talk about it. He says, oh, I dreamt I was boiling alive in my pot of Leola root stew.
That is justified.
That's terrifying, isn't
bubble,
it?
Bubble, bubble, toil and trouble.
But there is a really funny moment because somebody says to him something like, oh, that's really scary. And he went, yes, but it was still well seasoned, which made me laugh quite a lot. But he had time to actually check how well seasoned the stew was whilst he's boiling alive in it.
If there's a witch on Voyager stirring the witch's brew, it's Neelix stirring his Leola root stew.
I want to see Neelix in a witch's hat now.
He could totally come in like a sort of witchy, wizardy costume for Halloween.
Well, okay, if Neelix is the witch, who would be the wizard?
Tuvok.
Tuvok, absolutely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Tuvok's got robes.
He's already got the robes, yeah.
He's already got the robes.
He's already got the costume. He's just got to cut out some moons and stars from foil and like stick them on.
I'll get him a nice white beard.
Yeah, do you ever see Vulcans with beards? Like, ever, actually? This is a total tangent.
Only
but...
in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, okay, yes, we do. We see right.
Mirror Spock.
Yeah, I totally overlooked the obvious. There's a Mirror Spock with a beard. Absolutely.
But it's not a beard, it's a goatee.
That's a beard. It's a subspecies of beard.
No, a beard is different than a goatee.
No, in the Venn diagrams of beards, you have beards, and then inside that, you've got another circle with goatees.
Again, with Venn diagrams.
And then, you know, somewhere in there is Van Dyke.
Where's the soul patch?
A soul patch is not a subspecies of beard. I think that is outside the beard circle.
Yet you say a goatee
that falls
is in the
outside
beard
of the Venn diagram. So
it's right there. It's got to be somewhere.
It's in the large set of facial hair, but it is outside the set of beards.
But I really think, you know, even though we do get this one visual image with Janeway, I think the scariest thing about this episode for me is the overall concept of it. The fact that we've got this kind of set of aliens that have got control over whether we're awake or asleep, and the fact that we keep seeing Chakotay, like, he's awake, but then actually he's not really awake, he's still in the dream, and just this idea of you losing the concept of whether it's real or not, that's just a scary concept, I think.
Yeah.
You're just like, am I still in the dream or am I now awake? And the fact that you'd end up feeling like you didn't know whether you were back in the real world or
like
not.
Like every single holodeck episode should be like that. Like, how do I know I've really left the holodeck?
Well, yeah, exactly. How do you know you've actually left the holodeck? Or
you never know.
So it's the same type of idea. It's this idea of blurring the lines between what's real and what's not real. It's a whole messy area that could get like psychologically quite damaging if you're not careful.
So you're envisioning some sort of Cartesian dream world holodeck thriller?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just wondering how, you know, the episode would look to mash up all of the weird scary Halloween concepts that we've come up with.
Like Monster Mash?
Yeah.
Okay. The Monster Mash. It was a graveyard smash.
Do the Muslim match.
It was a Delta Quadrant smash.
Well, it's been a lot of fun talking about Barry White's role in Voyager tonight. But that's not the only thing that we've been talking about here on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
For an opening episode to get that relationship, like, you could see that crew really had been working together for 7 years, which is so not normal for a launch, for a first episode, right? Because you've got the odds, but they seemed to have working forever together. The camaraderie that they had, the trust that they have with each other.
To the journey!
And then, you know, they're all up on the bridge and everyone's like, oh, what's B'Elanna doing with her day off? And Tom's like, oh, she's binge-watching Bill Nye. She's been there, you know, in her PJs since 8 o'clock this morning.
I can picture she's been watching Bill Nye all day. Tom comes home and she says to Tom, you know, Tom, have you ever thought about wearing a bow tie?
But if he's on the bridge and says all that, would Captain Janeway know who Bill Nye the Science Guy is?
Yeah. It's Janeway.
The 602 Club.
So I graduated from high school in 1984. So this film came out in my, sophomore year in high school? So that was like prime formative years for me. This is, you know, this and Mad Max were the R-rated movies that me and all of my friends wanted to go see.
Meta Treks.
It knows to point that out and say, that's red. You know, it will correctly identify the red shirt as red, but really perceives it like we perceive blue.
I knew Kirk should have wore his green tunic when he went to fight the Gorn.
Yeah, it would have made all the difference.
It would have made all the difference.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You will find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And whilst you're there, please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can also stream and download the MP3 file from our website, or you can grab the RSS link.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways that you can share your thoughts with us. The best place to join in the larger conversation with us is in the Babel Conference, our listeners-only discussion group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Just choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Well, speaking of contact information, Suzanne, when you're not singing assimilation tunes with Barry White, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me popping up on the Babel Conference. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8. Kay, when you're trying to figure out where you fall on the Delta Quadrant food chain, where can our listeners find you?
Well, elsewhere on Trek FM, you can find me on this week's episode of The Edge, talking about Star Trek Discovery. That's episode 16. You can also always find me in the Babel Conference, and if you want to look me up on Twitter, my handle there is Choco Weeble. Zach, when you're not performing covert medical experiments on your co-hosts, where can our listeners find you?
That's all I do. What are you talking about?
I knew that this headache was your fault.
I was going to say, this migraine I've had for a while.
These podcast headphones are like vice grips. Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of Meta Treks, Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy, along with my co-host over there, Mike Morrison. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me over there. And you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. All available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We would like to take a minute to acknowledge the rest of our To the Journey team from around the network. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm and always the winner of our Delta Quadrant Deathmatch. We'd like to thank our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shea Mutala, our Patreon manager. And a special thank you and a shout out to our five associate producers here on To the Journey. We'd like to thank Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you very much for your support of To the Journey and the Trek FM network.
So join us next week when we will all be sharing the same dream. But until then, this has been To the Journey. We'll be right back.